Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. A special one this week, a little later on, a tribute to our friend, one of the top journalists in all of California and our most frequent guest over the last year and a half, Carla Marinucci of Politico, who's stepping back after 40 years covering California politics every day. We'll talk to her and got a lot of special surprise guests who are joining us to pay tribute to her. But let's begin, though, with the issues on The Issue Is. And the big issue this week continues to be COVID-19. Kids about to be able to get vaccinated, those from 5 to 11. Booster shots, a concern, questions about masking. We bring up all of that with the California Secretary of Health and Human Services, Dr. Mark Galli, who is often in Governor Newsom's ear and one of the key decision makers leading public health policy in this state. So we talk with him again a little later on, Carla, but let's begin with Dr. Galli.
Dr. Galli, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Hey, thanks, Alex, for having me. Great to be back with you.
Before I get to the serious questions, what did you think of the governor's flex?
I mean, that's why I applauded, not because he got the shot, because of the flex. I mean, quite a move.
All right. Let's talk about kids from ages 5 to 11 getting vaccinated. The LA Times put out an editorial wondering if we should really be mandating this. Let's put this up on the screen. They say that COVID cases are way down right now. There's still some questions about how the vaccine could impact kids long term when it comes to expansion of the heart. And they're wondering why make it voluntary. Why make it mandatory instead of voluntary? In addition to being health secretary, you're a father and you're a pediatrician. What do you say to parents who say, I don't feel comfortable with my kid getting vaccinated? Why can't I, as a parent, make that choice?
So first, as a pediatrician, I often say, well, let's talk about it. Let's answer the questions that you might have about this vaccine or any other vaccine or any treatment, frankly. So we want to make sure people have the information to move forward with confidence. And then I remind them that we have a number of vaccines that are required today for schools. And that in the case of the COVID-19 vaccine, we know that COVID, although kids aren't dying at the same rates as adults, and thank God for that, but that it still has significant impacts. You know, this week we talked a little bit in the media about the behavioral health, the psychiatric impact of COVID on some California teenagers. We know that we've seen a number in the hospitals and the ICUs, and long COVID is a serious concern of ours for kids, and we're learning about that as well. So the idea that COVID has actually been the eighth worst killer of young people, kids, in our country this last year, and every preventable child death should be sort of aggressively pursued. So we believe that this is a vaccine that is going to not just help us reduce the risk of losing another child life, but really the long-term consequences of impacts of COVID that we yet to truly understand and see could be reduced and prevented. And so we're waiting till full FDA approval, and we're going to work hard to make sure that a lot of young people get their questions answered, their families get questions answered, and well before it's mandated, that we're seeing a lot of California's kids get vaccinated as well.
So it would not be mandated for California students until it gets full FDA approval. But still, to that point, why not make it a choice? Why does it have to be mandated?
Well, we have a number of vaccines that aren't a choice either to go to school, that they're required. And COVID and the infection that the COVID virus causes is a severe one. It's transmissible in the air. It can be easily transmitted in schools. And so making sure that the school environment is safe and secure for kids, all kids to learn, is an obligation we hold strongly. And we've been doing that this year, right? We've seen the impact of masks. We've seen the impact of getting some eligible kids vaccinated. So making sure that that is the standard in California schools is an important one.
We see all the beautiful artwork behind you from your kids. Are your kids going to get vaccinated?
Yeah, I mean, as soon as it's made available, we've made the decision. We've talked about it, my wife and I. Many of you know her. We've sat down and talked about the data, the information, and feel it's the right choice for them. We want to move not just through the school year, but through outside events and the holidays coming up, and making sure that our three young ones who haven't been yet eligible get vaccinated right away.
His wife, by the way, is Dr. Christina Galli, who's one of the leaders at LA County Health. Let's talk about booster shots. You got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine originally. So did the governor. This week, both of you got a Moderna booster. We know you can mix and match vaccines, but if the viewer watching this got J&J like you did, does the science show that it's better to mix and match?
Well, I'm not sure that it shows that it's better, but certainly mixing and matching is not a new concept. We do that with a lot of vaccines already. Frankly, we often don't know the manufacturer of the vaccine that we're receiving. What we do know is what it's preventing in terms of the infections that we give it. So that concept is not a new one. And so better or worse, a little bit of uncertainty and still things to learn. But for me, the decision was really based on use different modalities, really challenge my immune system to boost it up significantly so I feel as secure as I can be out in the community at the events that I have the privilege of going to, and then, of course, over the holidays.
So if you had a patient, would you recommend that they mix and match if they got J&J?
I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. I think some people feel really comfortable because they had a good experience with one type and they don't want to potentially have a side effect, miss a few days of work, have a high fever or some pain at the site, and they know what they know and they like it, and that's totally supported as well.
We know there's been some debate about who should get a booster shot. Why shouldn't everybody get a booster shot? Is there harm in getting one?
Well, there's risk with everything. I mean, we say that very clearly, and these vaccines are very safe, very effective, and we never want to give more medications, vaccines, treatments than are necessary or required. And what we do know about the data that came out on boosters is that for some populations that we know their immunity wanes after a certain amount of time, after receiving the full series, that an additional shot, a booster shot, is necessary. Some people feel like, well, if we had more time, we would have already created a three-shot series from the beginning, and we wouldn't be calling these booster shots. But the point is they boost the immunity of some people who maybe saw their immunity wane. So it's super protective for certain groups. And then for others who are exposed, who are in communities that have really been ravished by COVID, we're saying, you know, if it's right for you, go ahead and get it. We believe you're fully protected against severe disease as it is, but given that added sense of protection and security as we move into what was a really hard time last year for California, we're really encouraging people to make that individual choice, have a conversation with their doctor, with their healthcare provider, and go ahead and get the booster if that's what's right for you.
Big picture question, how are we doing overall in terms of vaccinations in California? Where are we at?
I mean, we're doing really well. We're a top 10 state, the biggest state in that top 10. Almost 86 or 87% of eligible Californians getting at least one dose, if not fully vaccinated, really prepared for what's coming with the 5 to 11-year-old approval that could be here as soon as next week. 4,000 sites across the state ready for that. Lots of media on it, lots of encouraging information and making sure that people who want to get it early for their young 5 to 11-year-olds can do that. So I feel like we've done a tremendous amount of work on vaccinations, but I always am reminded that in certain communities where there's still lingering questions, people are concerned about one thing or another, that we have work to do and we can still get more Californians vaccinated. And though the conversation is about boosters and 5 to 11, our still heavy, heavy focus is how do we get the unvaccinated vaccinated?
That's an astounding number, 86%. And you guys deserve a lot of credit for that. I know when we first started this conversation months and months and months ago, it was like, let's get to 70% and we'll be at herd immunity. We're way past that as a state. So if most people now are vaccinated and soon kids can get vaccinated too, and the rate of cases is so low in California, why can't we start lifting the mask mandates in this state?
Well, I mean, so we think that it's tremendous what we've done on vaccinations, but we still have a significant number of susceptible Californians, people who may have been vaccinated, who are at high risk. So older Californians who are vaccinated early in the campaign, thank them for doing that, who now need to and should get a booster shot to have that protection. So as we slowly but surely move into this really exciting holiday season where it gets a little colder, people gather indoors, Halloween's coming up, and then we go right into Thanksgiving and other winter holidays, keeping some of the really well-proven protective mitigating strategies like keeping masks on in certain settings is something that's going to be important for the next couple of months. And then, as we always have been, reevaluate, look at the data, and do what we can to make sure that the benefits of vaccine, the strength of this incredible miracle to protect our state really pays off for Californians, and when we can safely lift masks in schools or other settings, we intend to.
But last winter season, our vaccination rate was close to zero. Now we're at 86%. I mean, isn't there a difference because of that? Isn't the proof that the vaccines work mean that we can start removing some of these things?
Well, and absolutely. And I mean, one very important message is these vaccines have been tremendous. I mean, I call them a miracle, and that's not sort of embellishing in any way. These have been such a powerful protective tool. But also a year ago, we weren't nearly as open as a state. A lot of people were staying home. Most kids weren't in schools. People were prepared to heed a different sort of holiday season message than we are this year. And we weren't dealing with certain variants that we know are just more transmissible and land some people in the hospital a little sooner than the earlier forms of COVID. So when you balance these out, I think there's still a lot of unknown. And even today, we're seeing a higher number of cases in California. We're seeing our test positivity climb, and that transmissibility factor, that R effective that we were talking about early on, is higher in some regions and above one in the greater Sacramento area, the San Joaquin Valley, and in places where we know they've been hard hit before. So holding on to this a little bit longer, I think, is going to get us through a pretty uncertain but concerning time.
But last question on this. You got to understand some people's frustration, though, that they feel like this is like an endless thing, right? And they see other states that don't have a lot of these mask requirements in places. They see football games with crowds of thousands of people not wearing masks, and they don't see mass outbreaks from it. And they wonder, what is the science showing?
Well, I mean, the science shows, and I mean, if you just look at our schools, we have 12% of the students, a large percentage of the schools in the nation, and less than 1% of the closures because of COVID outbreaks. And this is a state that is doing testing. We're tracking those outbreaks. So they have shown that in certain very important areas, which are largely indoors, we've seen the payoff of having masks in place. And to get through this time of uncertainty is something that we're concerned about. And talk about people who are frustrated or having questions. You know, even my own kids ask me about masks and when we might not have to wear them at school. And we have this same conversation. Understand that it's a difficult time. Don't want to pretend that it's easy. But we've been allowed to do so many things some other states haven't been able to do in the recent months because of the fact that we've kept the masks on in schools. And I think the data has shown the protection and ability to allow safe and in-person education to happen for almost all kids in California.
This is such a serious conversation. We do want to have a little bit of fun here at the end. I know in addition to running the state's healthcare system and being a father of young kids, I know you watch our show every week. So last week, I don't know if you saw this, but we want to show you some video of Andrew Yang was on our show in studio. And we were playing basketball together. He was on our set showing off his basketball skills. Little did we know, at that exact moment, you and Governor Newsom happened to be on a basketball court as well, and you released this TikTok to promote people getting the flu vaccine. Take a look.
Just me and my twin in them. Yeah, that's my twin in them. Oh, best friend, we killing them. No, no friends, get rid of them. Just me and my twin in them.
Yet another flex. So how does your game compare with the governor's game? Who's better on the court?
No, you're trying to get me fired here? you know, I will just say the governor's shot looked great. I mean, his follow through, his form, he was even. He had a nice fadeaway. I mean, it was pretty, pretty impressive. You know, but I would say probably my finger roll and my layup looked good. And you know, I have an inch on him, so I'm not sure how we would do one-on-one, but probably another time we'll have a chance to do that. And anytime you want me on the set to shoot a little bit, I'd love to come.
I was about to say, open invite to join us in studio. I mean, we don't get to see your kids' beautiful artwork, but we would get to see your beautiful finger roll. Dr. Galli, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it, and hope we'll see you here soon.
Yeah, no, thank you very, very much. Take care.
All right.
Our thanks to Dr. Galli. Now, a special conversation with Carla Marinucci of Politico on the week that she announced that she is leaving the California Politico playbook, going on sabbatical for 6 months. And when she returns, she's not going to be doing the day-to-day political reporting, but working on different concepts for Politico and special projects. It is crazy to think that she will not be in the scrums, because there is nobody better and no one more fun. We love her. And here is a special conversation where you can learn from a master.
Carla Marinucci, welcome back to The Issue Is. And this week, the issue is you.
Thank you, Alex.
So why are you leaving?
Look, after 40 years, it's time to explore some new stories like the wine in Bordeaux and other places. Alex, look, California, covering California is the best. You know that. It is a drama. It is a roller coaster ride for you, literally a roller coaster ride with the governor. No place else can you do that. But now I want to try doing that in other parts of the world. And so that's what we're going to do for a couple of months, at least a couple of months. I plan on, you know, coming back to Politico and doing some projects in 2022. But right now, boy, I'm looking forward to this new adventure.
And you're going to France, right?
Going to France and Spain, and the EU will be trolling all over the place there. So that's my plan. News could break out, but right now, that's where I'm going.
That sounds so much fun. Of course, you are most associated with San Francisco. You spent 30 years with the San Francisco Chronicle, got a front row seat to the rise of some of California's most important political figures, including the congresswoman from San Francisco, Nancy Pelosi. Talk to us about her at the beginning.
You know, Nancy Pelosi is one who has always understood the importance of media and the press and getting her message out from the start. My very first day as a political reporter, she invited me to lunch. We sat down. Her connection to San Francisco, I mean, to watch this woman over the decades do 5-6 events a day in San Francisco in 5-inch heels, it's an adventure. And I have to say, she's one who calls you on it if she doesn't think you're being fair. There's been more than one press conference where they've said the speaker wants to talk to you after this is over. And she's dressed me down for either coverage or the way I've interpreted things. Always fair, though. Always an adventure to cover her. And watching her now, this is an interesting and an important and unbelievable woman to cover for so many years.
Yeah, and this week, one of the most important weeks in her long history as well. Meanwhile, Kamala Harris also starting in San Francisco politics. Talk to us about her in the early days.
Another one. I mean, deputy district attorney in Oakland, where we first started covering her. Look, this is somebody who's been underestimated, who's been really scrutinized from the beginning of her career. She has managed to jump every political hurdle people have thrown at her. She has been, a lot of people say, as vice president, she's getting sort of the Hillary Clinton treatment. That is a lot of scrutiny, a lot of criticism, but a groundbreaking woman who, from the very start in San Francisco, I think we identified her as someone to watch, as a groundbreaker for women of color and for women in politics. This is the one to watch in 2024 so far. Her and Gavin Newsom on parallel tracks for a long, long time. That has been a drama in San Francisco. So we're going to continue to watch that as the next cycle goes on.
Yeah, because they've been kind of frenemies, right, for years and years, going back when Gavin Newsom was married to Kimberly Guilfoyle, who was the district attorney's office at the same time as Kamala Harris. They were sort of rivals there. I mean, you talk to us about when you first met Gavin Newsom. He was in his like 20s or 30s, right?
That's right. 1996, he was appointed a parking and traffic commissioner in San Francisco. That's when we first started covering him. You know, he was identified from the start as someone who is a star quality candidate for the next generation of Democratic leaders, even going back then. He showed himself to be somebody who knew how to work with younger voters, a communicator, a stellar communicator when he wanted to be, but also somebody who could have self-inflicted wounds, like that famous photo of him with Kimberly Guilfoyle on the rug of the Getty Mansion that continues to haunt him today. I mean, those kind of things, watching Gavin Newsom both stumble and get up, this has been sort of a continuing thing. And over the years, his development as a candidate, as a governor now, and his relationship with the press, which has been prickly all the way through. But at the same time, Gavin Newsom knows how to deliver a message when he wants to. He is also, when you talk about 2024 and beyond, Gavin Newsom is somebody who has ambitions going beyond the governor's chair. And he's going to be somebody that California is going to watch along with Kamala Harris. As you said, frenemies, yes, but they've also been there for each other when it's counted. So let's watch that one.
Although Gavin Newsom says over and over again that he doesn't want to be president, has no ambitions for that, and has never thought of it. And I don't think there's anybody in the California press corps who believes that.
No, no. Look, in his high school yearbook, his parents put in their White House at his 40th birthday. People remember that toast to the White House. That's been part of the discussion for a long, long time, and I think will continue to be.
Yeah. So the biggest story of this year in California politics was the recall effort against Governor Newsom. But one of the biggest stories you've ever covered was the recall of Gray Davis back in 2003, which brought with it this political force named Arnold Schwarzenegger. You were on the bus. You were with him every step of the way during that, went on a lot of trips with him when he was governor. Talk about what that experience was like and how unique Arnold was as a force in terms of this state.
I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger provided the kind of Hollywood moments in politics that you're just not going to get in another state. I remember on his election night during that 2003 recall, as he was taking the stage to make his acceptance speech, he came over to me on the side of the stage and just said, "Only in America, only in America." And that is Arnold Schwarzenegger. That is his story. I mean, there were moments covering him that were right out of the movies. I remember going to a big physical fitness conference with him. He's a star. He's an icon with that crowd. As we entered the arena with thousands of people screaming his name, I was right behind him. He turned to me and he said, "Don't worry, I will protect you." And I thought, what other governor cites, script from the Terminator movies? I mean, this is what he did. He managed to take that Hollywood image and use it in the office, and continues, by the way, I think, to use it today. He remains a global figure on the issue of climate change. He has not squandered the fact that he is such a well-known figure, and he has used it for things that he thinks are extremely important to the country. So he continues to speak out, and I think he deserves a lot of props for that. His ex-wife, Maria Shriver, also. The entire family has been sort of an activist crowd not only in San Francisco, in Northern California, and in California in general and the world. So I think that Schwarzenegger has managed to be somebody who is bigger than life in the movies, on the silver screen, and in politics as well.
And his kids continuing with that as well. And there's been so many giant figures over the years, Willie Brown, Jerry Brown, so many different people that you've covered. And the access has also really changed. Talk about how, you went from being this old school print reporter to now a social media influencer.
Yeah, that's right, Alex. When we covered President Clinton, he came to California more than 70 times as president, 70 times. And on every trip and everywhere he went, we were allowed to go with him into the biggest and most influential homes in Hollywood for every fundraiser, to watch him speak to his followers in living rooms of the most famous people. That has all ended. That kind of access to a president, that kind of access to any candidate, even the governor, is just not there anymore. Social media has changed that. Social media didn't exist in the first recall at all. Facebook, Twitter, Google, these weren't even around. Today, the elected officials don't need the media as much, and certainly don't allow media that much access. I think, it's interesting. I covered Trump, Donald Trump, on his first campaign in California in 1999. He ran for president as a Reform Party candidate. Back then, he invited me to go with him to hang out with Jay Leno. We spent an hour in the green room watching these guys go back and forth with jokes. That kind of access, Donald Trump sent me a handwritten note after that saying, you can interview me anytime. Mm. Years later, my last and very last connection with him was as president. He came to Sacramento on the tarmac. He called me nasty for asking a question about where he was, what took him so long to get to California in the wildfires. So loved media. But lately, and that's how much things have changed, politicians have put media at arm's length.
I was standing nearby when that happened, and there were many people that were like, how dare you say that to Carla Marinucci? Carla, you have so many great stories. We can't fit it all into the TV broadcast, but if people want to hear more of them, and it's totally worth doing that, go to youtube.com/AlexMichelson or the Issue Is podcast to hear more behind-the-scenes stories from Carla. Part of the reason that we're limited on time for the TV broadcast is, Carla, we've got a few surprises for you. We know you are so beloved in the California Press Corps. I reached out to some of our friends who are all Issue Is regular panelists to share their thoughts. Let's begin with your co-editor of the California Politico Playbook, Jeremy White.
Carla, it's been an honor being your co-pilot these last few years and a joy learning that you're not just an amazing reporter, you are a wonderful human being. Good luck with what's next, and I will always do my best to do justice to the amazing newsletter you built.
Hey, it's John Myers from the Los Angeles Times. I can't talk. I'm desperately trying to beat Carla Marinucci. Oh, she beat me again on another scoop. Congrats, Carla. We'll miss you.
Hey, Carla. It's your friend Laurel Rosenhall from Cal Matters. I am so happy for you. You're such an inspiring journalist, and I cannot wait to see what you do next. Cheers.
Hi, Carla. It's Doug Sovereign from KCBS Radio in San Francisco. I can't believe this is happening. I'm going to miss you so much. There's never been anyone else like you. You're the bravest. You're the best. You're just in a league of your own. Bon voyage, mon ami. Mwah.
Hi, I'm Melanie Mason with the Los Angeles Times, and I know a lot of journalists. But believe me, none of us are a match for Carla's hustle, her smarts, and her sense of fun. Carla, congratulations and thank you. You earned the sabbatical.
I'm Jessica Levinson. Carla, you are absolutely the gold standard when it comes to journalists and people. This is a better state because of you. I'm a better person because of you. Wishing you absolutely the best of the best.
Hi, I'm Seema Mehta from the LA Times. Carla, you've been such a role model and such a trailblazer, and more importantly, you've been such a good friend for so long. I admire the hell out of you, but I'm also so relieved that I'm not going to have to worry about you beating me for the next several months. Have an amazing sabbatical.
Joe Garofoli, San Francisco Chronicle. Carla, to my friend, my paisan, my co-creator of Shaky Hands Productions, you have inspired me and multiple generations of California journalists. Congratulations on your next step. I toast you with a glass of homemade limoncello, aguri. The bottle's coming your way.
What do you think?
Wow, Alex, you have, I'm in tears. That's so beautiful. Thank you so much. But, you know, this is about you too. I think, you know, you represent a whole new generation of journalists that I think are taking it up and just killing it. That's what it's all about. California is the place to be.
It's not about me. It's about you today. Enjoy the moment. And I'm not done yet. I've got even bigger surprises still to come, if that's possible. I reached out to an Issue Is viewer here in Southern California, and he sent us this.
See, Lulu and I, Carla, we're very upset because you're taking a sabbatical. I mean, what the hell is this all about? Let me ask you that. I mean, don't fix what is not broken. This was perfect. You did the perfect job. You did the perfect work. I mean, your writing is fantastic. This is where I get my political news. So why would you do that? In any case, I wish you good luck on your sabbatical. And what I like about it is that they call it a sabbatical because that means that you have to say, I'll be back. Have a great day. Bye-bye, Carla.
What do you think of that?
Oh, my God. I can't handle it. That is priceless. That is priceless. Yeah.
And so him, right?
So him.
Yeah. So he's not the only issue is viewer who sent in regards. Here's an issue is viewer I reached out to in Northern California.
Hey, Carla, it's Gavin Newsom. Not that I need to introduce myself to you, since you've tracked me. You've known my movements for probably 2 decades now, which is just extraordinary. One of the things that I think defines you, separates the work you do from, respectfully, many others, is there's no malice. You're going to get the story. You're going to be dogged. Wherever it leads, you're going to follow. And you're going to hold us to account. And that's a good thing. But there's no malice. There's no edge. And I just hope other younger reporters out there pay a little more attention to your approach to journalism, to how you approach excellence and truth-seeking and accountability, because they all need to learn a little bit from you. And I say that a little selfishly, because I hate to see you take any time off, even the short sabbatical. I'll see you again. We'll all see you again soon, I'm sure. But I hope other journalists out there, pause and just reflect that the world needs more Carla Marinucci's.
Wow. I'm speechless. I think I have to say, hearing from Governor Newsom and hearing from Governor Schwarzenegger and my colleagues, we're competitors. We're hard competitors. I'm a competitor with you, Alex, but I think we all understand that civility and just, joy in the job is what's really important. And I think you bring that. I think this whole group of folks in California is special because we all bring that to the job. That's just important.
And he talks about the next generation of journalists. What's your advice to those of us in the next generation?
Yeah, I mean, I think, under trying circumstances with social media, you're under attack. The public doesn't have as much trust in media as they did. The bottom line is to just bring it with a sense of truth and a sense of responsibility. And I think the governor got it right there. Malice. Not to have that edge, to just come at it with a sense of delivering the truth to the public. That is what it's about. And I think you do that so well. So many of my colleagues that you saw today do it so well. There's a respect there for the job and for the public. And that's what we've got to continue to have, not to be drawn into the vortex, to continue to stay on the straight and narrow when it comes to delivering the truth. So continue to do that, Alex. You are a hero in the job, in my view.
Oh, my God. Well, I love you, and I hope you're feeling the love today because you deserve it. And after all the appearances you've been on, first time you ever were speechless on this show. So that's something.
Our thanks to Carla Marinucci for a masterclass in journalism. Our thanks to Dr. Galley for joining us as well. And our thanks to you for listening to this podcast from The Issue Is. We hope you'll join us again next week. We hope you'll rate, review, subscribe, tell people about us, reach out to me on social media. Thanks again for listening. See you next time for more The Issue Is.